and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 410. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me this week is the return of Glenn Fox.
Hello.
And the usual return of Emily Soden.
Yeah, see, my presence isn't that exciting.
I don't say that like it's a bad thing. I say that when people are now familiar with you, you're a welcome and frequent presence. Whereas Glenn, more of an interloper.
Yeah, and a nightmarish presence when I am here.
Lurking in the background, spectral, all hands clawing for my neck.
Ugh. Yeah, sounds like me.
I'm surprised you acquiesced to that so quickly. Yeah, that's me. I'm an awful horror.
At least he accepts it.
Yeah, that's good. It just occurred to me that we are creeping up. It's episode 410, and we're nearing 420. Episode 420.
That's we should have to get really high.
That's going
to
be the spaced out episode where we're all just like, games, man. Wow.
I'm like that now.
I was going to say, actually, that is, that's what we do anyway, isn't it? There will be no difference whatsoever. What have you guys been up to? I've been modding a pair of AKG over-the-ear headphones to make them Bluetooth.
Oh, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, because really good Bluetooth headphones are hella expensive. You're talking like minimum £100, probably more likely £200, £250. But you can buy really, really good over-ear headphones for about like, you know, 50 to 80 quid. Really solid ones. Mm-hmm. And then you buy a little Bluetooth module thing and a bit of soldering and whatnot, and you've got yourself some sweet Bluetooth cans.
That's pretty cool. I would never do it myself because I'd be terrified, but it sounds great.
Well, I was originally, and I've done a few things recently, like kind of Raspberry Pi thing, where it's like, can I actually make this from scratch? And you realize it, because you see a chipboard, and you're like, oh God, it looks like tech and work, and I don't understand it. But actually, it's quite simple if you follow the instructions, and this stuff is sort of similar. Basically, I'm preparing for the apocalypse that's coming. I'm brushing up on my survivalist skills so that when the nuclear wave hits me full in the face, I can make some really sweet headphones.
And play some sweet old school video games.
That's me, I'm sorted. Don't need to worry about all that food nonsense.
Nah, screw all that. That'll be
just
fine.
Just got some tunes. What have you guys been up to?
Then.
Someone must have done something.
Wish I could say I did, but I really didn't this week. I've been just working nonstop. From like the moment I get up to the moment I go to bed.
That sounds familiar. Yeah. People think that the life of a games person is glamorous and stuff, but it mostly is that. Especially when you're, because you know, not the most high paying career in the world, so you often do other things alongside so that you can have food and pay a rent, like be an author, for example, Emily.
Yeah.
Or do other things for other things. So yes, it's mostly just wake up and then work forever in a small room.
Yeah, that pretty much sums up my life for the past year. Fun, though. Wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, it sounds like we're complaining, but we're not. It's cool. We get to play loads of games. Loads of games, like the games that came out this week. Atomine, new game that came out. Twin Stick Shooter, is it any good? Oh, I think it's quite nice. I'm going to talk about Datawing, even though it didn't technically come out this week. It's one of the coolest things I've played in a hell of a long time. And I'm going to shove it in your face regardless. Plus, we got some news about L.A. Noir resurfacing from the past and imprinting itself onto our portable futures. First things first, the news. Warhammer Quest 2. We've talked about it on previous podcasts. We're all broadly looking forward to it, and we knew it was underway, being made by Pachang. God, it's so fun to say. Instead of Rodeo Games, who made the first one, we didn't have a launch date when we first talked about it, but now we can reveal it is coming to iOS on October the 19th, which is very good news. Is anyone else hyped for this one? Did you enjoy the first one or even play it?
The longer that goes on and the more I'm learning about the game, the more hyped I'm getting.
Oh, the hype works. The hype train. It's caught you up.
It did.
It's deserved in this instance, because it's not like it's out of nothing. The first game was really good, and it looks like they've done a lot of work to this one. There is a trailer up with the new story on Pocket Gamer. If you want to feed your own hype train, I suggest you go and have a look at it, because it looks all snazzy and lovely. And yeah, October 19th, keep your eyes on the site for more news. Now, the news that caused the most waves online this week on Twitter was a blast from the past. L.A. Noir. That game that was sort of controversial for a number of reasons when it first came out. The game itself was kind of loved in some ways and equally derided in others. I think it was an interesting mixture of success and failure, that one. And then later came a lot of hoo-ha over the development of the game and the fact that the developers had been subject to a lot of crunch, and there was a lot of stuff about the guy who ran the studio and how maybe he wasn't the nicest man in the world. And that became a whole other story all by itself. So, interesting little moment in video games, which is about to be reintroduced to a whole new crowd, potentially, on the Nintendo Switch.
Yay!
November 14th, people, L.A. Noire's coming. Are you gonna, A, play this? B, have either of you played it already?
All of the above.
Yes. I'm the first half of the above. Like, I didn't play it when it came out because of all the criticism it got, but like, and also that I'm not massive fan of like GTA. It's got to be said. Like, I out of all the stuff Rockstar's put out, like, I've always preferred their other things, like Bully and. Actually, I'm not making much sense because I'm literally saying I like everything Rockstar does apart from GTA, and that's why I didn't play L.A. Noire.
The biggest thing they do. Yeah. Explain to Glenn why L.A. Noire is not Grand Theft Auto.
Well, it has the car driving element in it, so that's
a good start.
You know, that's fair. And obviously, being in L.A., it's, you know, kind of fairly similar. But everything else is like completely different. You like go and investigate, you pick up clues and stuff. And if you, the thing I really like about it is that it's not like a level-based thing where you can go around a certain area and be like, oh, I think I've picked up all the clues, and it won't let you leave until you have. You've got to get all the clues, otherwise it hinders your investigation when you go in and like, talk to people in the interrogation booth. If you don't have certain elements, you can sometimes get the questions wrong or get into the interrogation booth. If you're like, oh, I found this knife in your suitcase, and they're like, that's not my suitcase, mate. And then if you don't find a label for it or something, you can be like, well, okay then.
Damn it!
So if you found the label for it, it's like, excuse me, Johnson, you're a bit buggered.
Is this like, not your nuts. Name?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, nightmare.
He's like, oh, you caught me, copper.
It's got a lot more in common with things like Ace Attorney in that regard. Mm. So yes, it looks, to see a screenshot of it, you can say, oh, it looks like a Rockstar game. It looks a bit GTA-ish. But no, it really is all about the interrogations and the idea, the big gimmick at the time was they've captured everybody's face for reals. And like, it's a strange mixture of tech. Like, this was the time when David Cage was doing Heavy Rain, and there was a kind of war between the two, because on the one hand, David Cage was doing full body capture. So he was trying to capture the faces of people and the movements performed by the actors all at the same time, much the way that we did with Gollum, and they do now with Planet of the Apes, and the way that mocap is now done, you know, Avatar and all that. Whereas L.A. Noire did the other method, which was, we're just going to capture the face, video them doing the performance, and then superimpose it onto a digital face, and it's going to look really good. Then we're going to stick that head on top of a body that someone else is performing and also looks a bit ropey and rubbish. So you've got these super detailed faces jiggling around on the top of these stick man bodies. And it's like, doesn't quite work, does it?
Yeah, no, that was... To look back on it now, actually, like at the time, I didn't really notice because I was like, oh, I'm a detective. But when I looked back on it like last year and I was like, wow, this is a little bit janky, but still fun.
Yeah, well, I had a very mixed experience with it. There are loads of elements of it I liked. I enjoy the investigation stuff. I mean, you like Nintendo business, don't you, Glenn? So, you know, yep. Ace Attorneys and all that. It's got, if you like that, there's a lot of that here. Search the clues, go, ha, I found the thing, go back to the interrogation room. Oi, look, fucking just shove it in their face, look what I found. And then the element which was unique about the game is you're supposed to work out whether they're lying or not.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all this business of, like, they'll say something, and then they sort of stop and just look about the room and raise an eyebrow or, you know, scratch their nose or whatever. And then you have the option to be like, you know, question or doubt or whatever. And then you can challenge them on it if you think that they're lying. Thing is, the acting ranged from being really good to maybe not so good. And it made it very difficult to tell whether someone was acting like they were lying or acting in an unconvincing way, which made it look like they were lying.
Yeah, I see the problem.
Yeah. That actually, I second that. I always got it. always got it wrong. Because sometimes people would just look around the room and stuff, and you'd be like, I think you're lying. And they're like, I'm not lying. And you get like a big X next to that question. And you're like, oh, God damn it. And you've messed up your investigation.
It's very ephemeral what doubt looks like on someone's face, or what shifty looks like. And some of them do this really like Machiavellian moustache twisting. They look around the room and you're like, oh, okay, fine. Whereas other people play it dead straight, and it becomes very difficult to judge. However, I did have fun doing that. I played it with a friend when I was sharing a flat with him, and we had quite a good laugh playing those bits. On the other hand, they build LA in the 1940s. Like, they recreate it. And it looks great. It's like this whole open world LA. You're like, wow, that's awesome. Cleopatra sets and... Sorry, not, yeah, it was sets for Cleopatra up on the studio lots. And it's like, damn, look at all the detail. And there's nothing to do in it. Because you're only ever going to one place at any one time. It's just like, go here. You're like, all right. And you go there. There's not like, oh, and I've got 15 other things to go and do and, you know, loads of stuff to investigate and stuff to find. There's nothing else there. It's like you've gone to all this trouble to create this massive open world. And then there's only ever one thing at any one moment to do, and the rest of it's just completely empty. You're like,
yeah.
Why did you do this? This seems like a lot of work for no reason.
Occasionally you can get the call-outs on the cop cars, but usually it's just like, oh, this guy's robbing a bank, go and shoot him or chase him down.
So it's
that's kind of boring.
It's very sparse, but it's impressive. So it's like, yeah, it was a strange game. However, I've seen a lot of people, again, a mixed response on Switch, people going like, yes, this is great, I get to play it, I love this game. There's a lot of like post-play goodwill for it, I feel. Do you think you will get it, though? You haven't played it first time, Glenn. You got a Switch now. Are you tempted?
Yes, but I've also saw it's coming out to PS4 as well, and I'm kind of, like, I do kind of want to play it. And I think I might get it on that platform instead.
But Glenn, you'll miss out on the Joy-Con mode with gyroscope and gesture-based controls.
I think I'll survive.
All right, fine. Will you double dip, Em?
I think I'll double dip. Just because I do enjoy the game, even though it does have like its kind of crappy moments. But I'm kind of hoping they've worked on some of those issues. And I also hope that the actual system will be able to run it, like, to load LA and not absolutely die of a heart attack.
Yes, hopefully the pop-in won't be quite so bad running on a PS4 or Switch. Yeah, well, 14th of November, you'll all be able to find out for yourselves on Switch, and as Glenn said, it's coming to Xbox One and PS4 as well. Plus, you'll be getting LA Noire, the VR case files added, 7 extra cases for people who have, like, HTC Vives and stuff over on that PC. So look out for all that in November. The Kingdom Rush series started out as an exciting blip on the tower defense genre. It grew to create 2 new sequels, Kingdom Rush Frontiers and Kingdom Rush Origins. And now the developers of the game are moving on to Iron Marines, a game which intends to take their tactical skills in a slightly different direction. I'm joined by Ariel, who's the lead programmer on the game. Hello, Ariel.
Hello.
And I'm joined by Cherson, who is the lead game designer.
Hi there.
As we just briefly covered, it's not a tower defense game. Iron Marines is a new beast, and you've gone towards the RTS genre. Why have you decided to go for that genre instead of carrying on making tower defense games?
Yeah, we are also fans of the RTS genre in PC. We tried to find a mix between what we were doing with Kingdom Rush and with RTS, but for more, right?
Now, you've shifted from the fantasy setting that we found in Kingdom Rush to a sci-fi setting for Iron Marines. Why have you decided to go for science fiction this time?
Obviously, again, we are fans of sci-fi books and movies, etc. The idea was to try to get a new IP in a different setting that we like. Obviously, we use some references. We liked StarCraft setting.
Mm-hmm. We dreamed back in days of Origins, Kingdom Rush in space.
Okay.
Yeah, the project started like a tower defense too, in some way, and then mutated in an RTS because the sci-fi setting was more aligned with RTS.
Well, are there any different challenges that you've stumbled across making an RTS game for touchscreen as opposed to tower defense, or is it a very similar kind of challenge that you're faced with?
No, it was the first iteration of the game was pretty hard because we were deciding how the controls were going to be. In Kingdom Rush, you have more static game. You only decide some stuff, but then the game play alone by itself. But in our game, you have to do a lot of things. You have to control all the time the unit. You have to move and reposition all the units. So it was really different to play than Kingdom Rush, because you had to touch and do stuff all the time in the screen. And we have to change a bit the controls. You move by dragging your units. Mm-hmm. It feels more natural, but it is not the control for Kingdom Rush. In Kingdom Rush, you click a unit and you click again and you move that for the heroes only. Then all the other units are static. You can change their position, like the barracks. Yeah, you change the rally points, but you don't move them across the screen. But in Iron Mines, you move the units all the time.
I mean, I guess you're dealing with a lot more variables, because in Kingdom Rush, you've got these few set points upon which you can mm-hmm. build towers dotted around the map. Whereas in Iron Marines, I'm guessing, like, when you're building your base, when you're creating fortifications, can you place them pretty much anywhere, or are you still restricted to certain points on the map?
Yeah, there is a lot of technical restrictions also, because mobile devices are restricted. For example, the texture size you can use. So we also have to consider that. For example, you can see in Iron Marines, the maps are not as big as an RTS in PC.
Sure.
But yeah, the reason about the places to fortify is mainly because of gameplay.
Yes.
If I've played Kingdom Rush, or if a player is coming from the Kingdom Rush franchise and picks up Iron Marines, are there going to be things that they recognize?
Yeah, the art style is pretty based on what we do here in Ironhide, but also the humor.
I think the hero, the stuff around the heroes, pretty the same.
Yeah, yeah. Also, well, this is a game focusing on heroes like Kingdom Rush Frontiers and Origins. You can level up the heroes, they gain experience between stages. So between missions, you can level up them and they can become
more powerful.
Yes, yeah, exactly. There is also the powers. Like in Kingdom Rush, you can buy powers by using gems. Here we have credits to help in battle.
Metagame is pretty the same, but you have achievements, you have upgrades, you have heroes.
You have rewards for getting achievements. That's one of the differences of Kingdom Rush, but the metagame is pretty the same.
We've actually got a video up on AppSpy from back in 2015 when we saw the game when it was in its early stages, which you can, if you're listening, you can go and check out and see what we're talking about. Regarding one of the things you mentioned during that interview is that it's not a multiplayer game. It is always playing against the AI, just like Kingdom Rush. It's that single-player campaign experience. Did you ever consider making it multiplayer, given that it's an RTS and that's quite a common feature?
Yeah, obviously. The thing is, when we started this project, we were already exploring multiplayer in other projects. The focus of the project was to get a new IP on a different setting, but we were trying to keep the risk down, the risk of the project. So we wanted to get something like Kingdom Rush, but in a different setting. So
we
didn't want to get a new risk of which is multiplayer, because we know from the technical side it is really hard. We are RTS players. I am an RTS player, StarCraft 2 multiplayer. So obviously we want a multiplayer game, but we knew that it wasn't.
It wasn't the time to take the risk.
You had a pretty fully working version or prototype of the game all the way back in 2015. So has it been quite a long development cycle? How long have you been working on it for?
Like
2 years
and a half. More than 2 years and a half. Yeah. The reason of that was we have the core working at that time. We have almost the final assets. I mean, the final graphic version. So we knew how the game was going to look, but we weren't sure about some stuff, like all the upgrades, tree, the progression. So we had a lot of iteration on that, and that was one of the reasons the game got delayed so much.
With Kingdom Rush itself, have you kind of ruled that franchise out for future installments, or is this a little break you're taking and then you think you might go back to Kingdom Rush later or expand on Iron Marines?
Well, we are already working on Kingdom Rush. There is another team working on Kingdom Rush 4.
Okay.
There is another team working on another project based on Kingdom Rush franchise. We are thinking about what's next, but that depends a lot on the release, which is the next week, by the way. So based on that, maybe we are going to think about expanding the Iron Marines universe, or maybe thinking about multiplayer. We don't know yet.
I see. Okay. The game's coming out next week, as you say, so it'll be hitting app stores then.
Well, yeah.
Are you releasing it at a premium price like with the previous Kingdom Rush games? Have you gone free to play? What have you decided?
It is premium. Mm-hmm. Like Kingdom Rush. No, don't remember the price, when Kingdom Rush came out. Mainly because of the experience, the single player experience, like Kingdom Rush. And there is also microtransactions, like you can buy heroes and stuff like Kingdom Rush. It is the same.
The business model is the same as Kingdom Rush.
Gotcha.
Kingdom Rush, we released the game and then we did some updates, some with content, and those updates were free. So people buying the game will have extra value in time.
Further down the line, I see. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay. Well, best of luck with the launch, and we look forward to seeing what you guys do with it in the future.
Thank you.
Out and about this week, we got some stuff on both iOS, Android, and Switch. So we'll start with mobile here with Atomine, which has come to the App Store on iOS and iPad. It is a twin-stick shooter that's been ported over from Steam. Has a very wireframe, glitchy look to it. The idea being that you're actually a module in a computer system running around and shooting stuff. Not the first game this week to touch on that topic. I played it on a hands-on video, and I enjoyed it with the reservation that it seemed to be a bit chuggy and slow, and discussed in the video the fact that it wouldn't even run on an iPhone 6. It ran on my iPad Air 2, but it didn't feel like it was running at optimum performance. So we're starting to enter that period where if you don't have an iPhone 7, games are not going to work properly, which is alarming to me.
It's weird that it's happening so quickly.
That's basically what I was going to say. I was just going to say, like, it's weird how, like, it used to be like, I remember when I first started, like, 3 years ago, you'd say, like, you know, an iPad gets you about 4 years before you start to struggle a tiny little bit. But now it seems to be, like, two devices behind and you're starting to get locked out of stuff. Not even just struggling, like, as in it doesn't support it.
Yeah. It's obviously some of the high-end games that are doing this, but I've played three games in the past week that have all gone like, nah, to my iPhone 6. And it's like, oh God, I know it's old, but it's not that old. So be warned, it doesn't say on the App Store either. And that's the thing irritated me, was it doesn't say like, oh, by the way, you want an iPhone 6S or above before you buy this. Because it is a premium game and it doesn't give you that warning. So we're warning
you. Yeah, that's
a
good point. The App Store should have that information, shouldn't it, before you download?
They generally do. They're generally good, but it's up to the developers to say so. And in this instance, they haven't. So, you know, I'm not super impressed with that. However, Harry played it, and he played it on his iPad, and he really, really liked it to the point where he gave it a gold award and said it was just kind of the thing that does everything you want from a twin stick shooter. I did like it. It did feel good. I like twin stick shooters on touchscreens. I think they work pretty well. And this one does feel nice. But the issue was to me that I just felt that bit of lag and that bit of stutter and jerk. And it's very visually noisy. When you get shot by your enemies, the entire screen goes glitchy, like you've lost reception on a TV or something. So with that going on, plus the complicated visuals, it's like, I cannot see what I'm doing and I don't feel like it's responding properly. So those moments became quite frustrating for me. But it's supposed to be challenging. It's supposed to be hard. If you have a higher end device, I'm sure it'll run a bit smoother. And Harry loved it. So gold award for that one. It's Atomine, and that's iPhone, iPad. I think it's $1.99, something like that. Now let's jump on over to you, Glenn. You've played a couple of Switch games this week I'd like to talk about. First one being Monster Hunter Stories.
Oh, this was a 3DS game, actually.
3DS. Yes. Shut my mouth.
Yeah, it's still alive, James. It's still going.
I'm glad to hear it. It's a lovely wee thing.
Yeah, I played Monster Hunter Stories this week, and it's a very odd game. It is Monster Hunter meets Pokemon, and everything you know and love from Monster Hunter has been sort of streamlined.
Right.
Does that sound like something you'd want to play?
Well, see, I like Monster Hunter a lot. It's quite time-intensive. It demands a lot of you, and I bounced off it when I first played it. I played Freedom Unite, the second game, and was like, what, on the PSP? And because of the horrible controls and the density of it, and it was just like, you know, all those glyphs. It's a very, very high learning curve on Monster Hunter. And a lot of people are like, what is this grind? I'm just dying again and again, and it's pointless. Whereas Monster Hunter 4, I totally jived with, and it was a good entry point. But it still demands a lot of you. So I can understand why they've done a version here which might bring the level down a little bit to make it accessible for noobs. But I wonder if that has lost what makes it quintessentially Monster Hunter-y, especially if it's now gone a bit Pokemon.
Yeah, it kind of has. Like, but when I heard about it, I was like, okay, accessible Monster Hunter for a younger audience. That makes sense. Like, like you said, it is kind of a tough ask to just sort of leap in and know exactly what you're getting into in the other Monster Hunters. And I do find that a bit of a shame because I really like the franchise. And I think if people can get past that initial curve, there's a lot to like there.
Mm. So you collect the monsters that you fight. In traditional Monster Hunter, you're killing the monsters and then grabbing bits off them and then making armor and weaponry out of them. And that's how you level up. In this one, you're actually taking the monsters themselves and adding them to what, like a zoo or something?
Yeah, essentially, you've got like a hatchery in the village and you can just sort of let them live there and you can bring them into combat with you. Just like Pokemon, you can bring about six at a time, switch between them as needed, and they also sort of join you in the open world so you can ride them and they've got like specific abilities that let you access different locations. Like some can climb, some can jump over a gap, and like a wider gap and stuff. So there's quite a lot of depth there.
Okay.
I like it. A problem I've got with it is I just don't really know who it's for, because they've kind of alienated the core fan base by removing so much of, you know, the stuff they love about Monster Hunter. Some of it's still there, but like you still do gather resources and upgrade and buy new gear and stuff, but it's so watered down that I can't imagine people who actually love Monster Hunter are going to play it and prefer the system. It needed something more to draw them in. And unfortunately, I don't think the monster hunting and collecting stuff is going to draw Pokemon fans in, because it's sort of way more established in that franchise. It's not as well done here. Basically, you run out into the world, very much like a Monster Hunter level, like you're running around gathering resources, fighting enemies, but then occasionally you'll find something, a monster den, which is essentially a small dungeon, run in, fight more enemies, gather more resources, and then at the end you'll find eggs, and you basically just grab the egg, and you've got to run out of the dungeon before getting attacked by another monster, or you'll drop the egg.
That bit is quite Monster Hunter. I remember the egg grab missions.
Yeah, exactly.
But then you keep the egg and it hatches out or something. Okay.
Yeah, once you're at the dungeon, you've got the egg. You don't have to like run all the way back to the village with it. You've just got the egg, then you can hatch it when you get back to the village.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about Pokemon, for me at least, is like when you're playing Pokemon, like you're catching another Pokemon really, really quickly. You're like, you run out in the world, you're running around some grass, you can catch like three Pokemon in like 15 minutes, and you've got them in your party ready to level up and all that. Like it's designed around that core experience. But Monster Hunter, like you're doing the Monster Hunter stuff like normal, but then there's this side quest that's collecting the eggs, but it's not really a side quest, it's kind of like the main experience.
Right.
It's got a lot of the stuff I like about Pokemon, it's got a lot of the stuff I like about Monster Hunter, but it's not as good as either of those games, and I've got both those games on my 3DS anyway, so while I'm playing, I'm just thinking, you know, if I wasn't playing this for review and I bought it, I'd probably just be heading over to either Pokemon or Monster Hunter to scratch the itch in one of those games, because they both do it way better.
I see. No, that sounds reasonable.
There's some technical issues as well which hold it back. Like, they've... I feel like Monster Hunter is one of those few franchises that on 3DS is sort of trying to push the bar in terms of, like, performance and visual prowess. Like, if you play Monster Hunter Generations, it looks like it should be a console game that's been sort of squeezed onto 3DS. And I sort of admire them for that. But this one, I feel like they've gone too far. Like, they've sacrificed the game itself just to try and make it look nicer when there's really no need for it. Because, like, they've gone for, like, a cel-shaded style, which is nice in itself. Like, if you go play Wind Waker now, especially the HD version, it still looks great today. So it proves that, like, very simple cel-shaded graphics can look really nice. But in this one, they've gone for a cel-shaded world design, but then they've added in, like, loads and loads and loads of, like, really nice design features for each character and stuff. And it looks gorgeous, but it's really, really struggling on the software. And I'm using a new Nintendo 2DS XL, so it's got that new processor in it, the faster one. So it really shouldn't be struggling. And, like, when you're in town, any character you can see in the distance is grayed out until you, like, run close to them, then they pop in and you get all the colours and textures. Okay. The frame rate is kind of all over the place. It looks like it's capable of 60 FPS, but you only really get that when you're sort of staring at a cliff wall. And the rest of the time it's sort of hovering between 30 and 60, like it kind of flips between the two. I remember me and you had a conversation quite a while ago where we were talking about frame rates and how doesn't really matter what the frame rate is as long as it's like at least 30, but it does have to be consistent.
Yeah, it's a stability over numbers. Yeah. If it's rock solid, then you don't notice so much.
Exactly. So I kind of feel like if they'd limited it to 30 FPS, I probably wouldn't have noticed any problems in inverted commas. Like, because it's varying so drastically. Like, when it goes to 30 from 60, it feels like the 3DS is bottlenecking when it actually isn't. It's just running as the game should be. It's just they've got that capability of running nicer in certain very small scenes, and I just feel like it's completely unnecessary.
Okay, all right. Well, mixed feelings on that one then, I guess. But it's out, I assume, digital download as well as a physical copy of the thing as well.
Yeah,
if you want it on 3DSs. So Monster Hunter Stories is the name. You've been doing some Switchy stuff, Em. So you've been taking a look at Lichtspear, which I have no idea about. What's this?
It's just absolutely bonkers.
Okay.
Moving on. No, I'm joking.
What type of game are we dealing with?
It is a spear-throwing side-scroller.
Mm-hmm.
That's the easiest way I can think of to describe that.
Right.
When I booted it up yesterday, it was just like, you may not get this game, but just go with it, basically.
The game says that.
Yeah.
All right, fine.
It's based in an ancient Germanic future.
Okay.
Yeah, let that sink in.
Sure.
So you pick a character, then one of the gods appears to you and it's like, well, I'm bored, so here's a spear, now go and kill people.
Nice.
Yeah. So then you head off on your journey. You know those old, like, flash-based defender kind of things?
Yeah, I'm looking at it now, and yes, that's the vibe,
like,
I'm getting as
well.
Like
zombie defense sort of thing, where you're on one side and the other people are, like, coming towards you.
Yeah.
It's like that, but, like, some of the zombies run really fast, and you've got hipster giants, which are, like, kind of slumbering and slow and take two shots to go down unless you headshot them.
Uh-huh.
Then you've got, like, flying creatures that come and get you that sort of dart this way and that and are really bloody hard to hit. And, like, penguin Vikings and seals and, oh, it's bananas, but it's actually really fun.
They've gone for one of those quaint 80s look in the trailer, so it's lots of pinks and blues and out-of-focus stuff. The mechanic of throwing your spear looks very Angry Birds. Are you using your finger on the screen or are you using your sticks?
No, it's all Joy-Con, baby.
It is.
Yeah, you aim with the left analog stick,
mm-hmm.
and then you have to hold down the A button to, like, extend your shot to its maximum, as
it were. So power it up and then you can fling.
Yeah, and then you go at it like your life is depending on it, which it is, because you go down in one shot.
Oh, right, okay.
I wasn't expecting to enjoy it as much as I did, because I'm not really into these sorts of games.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as, like, if you miss too many times, for example, you've got, like, a certain amount of energy that you get when you get loads of headshots and stuff. But if you lose all that energy and then you keep missing things, then it scared the crap out of me the first time it did it. But the god comes up and, like, goes right up in your screen's face and it's like, nine! I'm like, oh god, my heart!
Yells at you in German.
Yeah. Like, this whole thing is kind of, you know, that whole based around German, so everything's got a bit of a German name.
Yeah.
The more you get into the game, the longer, like, the waves get and the harder they get.
Yeah.
But it's not procedurally generated, I don't think, because every time I died, it was the exact same pattern of things to come out. So it's almost a bit Sonic-y in that kind of, you've got to learn the level and then you can really start going at them and like get loads of headshots and beat your own score, that kind of thing.
So authored levels, which is quite refreshing in this age of roguelikes being everywhere. Well, this one looks quite fun and daft. I can see it's on PS4 and PS Vita as well, and this is a port over to the Switch, but sounds like you broadly enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm writing the review for it at the moment because the Switch thing, the whole selling point of the Switch one, apart from it being portable, was that it's got co-op.
Ah, I see.
So I'm going to test out the co-op part of it this weekend. But my one issue with it so far is that when I take it into the handheld mode, everything gets like jammed in. And considering the screen is very busy anyway, like I was playing it on my computer monitor and it was perfectly fine. But as soon as I took it off and started playing with it in handheld mode, I was like, actually, this is 10 times harder.
What do you mean the interface actually changes, or you just mean because it's on a smaller screen, it's more difficult to read?
Just because it's on a smaller screen, so it's much more difficult.
Okay, fair enough. Well, you can grab that right now. I guess it's, you know, how much? Do you know how much? I guess it's a download thing for Switch.
I think it's $9.99.
Okay, yeah. It looks like a cheapy one, so that's fine. With.
Oh, how dare you?
What? It's a cheapy one compared to 50 quid or whatever for...
I know. It was just the way you said it. It's like, oh, it looks like a cheapy one. I was like, oh.
In a nice way. digital games are awesome.
Yeah, it's $8.99 or $9.99.
There you go, then. All right, then. Lichtspiel out on the Switch at the moment. Quickly, I'm going to throw in some more while we've still got time. Datawing is a game that came out on the App Store and on Google Play like 2 weeks ago, and to my shame, I missed it the first time around. And I'm here to tell you, you need to go and download it immediately, whoever you are, whatever you're doing. I won't say much more. It... on the surface looks like a top-down racer in a retro digital style where you play as the little asteroid triangle from Asteroids racing around a track. It's got a neat kind of acceleration mechanic where the closer you get to the edge, your little jet kind of boosts off of the side of the edge of the track and propels you further forward. That's how you accelerate, by kind of drifting really close to the edge of the corner, which is actually a really nice momentum-building mechanic. It makes you kind of swoosh around the corners. It's very satisfying. But it's not just a racer. It's a lot more than that. It starts going all weird and platformy almost, and then this meta-narrative appears over the top. And honestly, it's one of the coolest things I've played in ages, and it develops way more than you think it initially would. It's free, actually totally free, with no in-app purchases or anything, which is bonkers. The guy who made it was one of the dudes who worked for Halfbrick, so worked on Jetpack Joyride and all of that. And I guess he's just being generous because he's got loads of money. I don't know, but whatever the reason, Android or iOS, go and download it right now. It's the coolest thing and well worth your time. 8-Minute Empire came out, a little bite-sized board game thing that I've been playing a lot of today for a guide video that's going up. It's actually really fun. It condenses the idea of a Civilization-style game into, like the title says, a few minutes. And so you have maybe, depending on how many players you've got, if you've got two players, you've got about 13 turns. If you add players, the turns go down, so you can still do it in the time period. But it's just basically like, can you do an entire Civ campaign in the space of 10 turns and get it done in like 10 minutes? And surprisingly, it's an engaging little thing. And you've got a lot of stuff to play with in terms of grabbing countries, which earn victory points. And then if you grab the most countries in a continent, you get extra victory points for grabbing the continent as yours. And then there's stuff to do with resources as well. Watch the video if you're interested. It's £4.99 or $4.99. Glenn, you've been playing the next game from the Super Meat Boy folks on your Switch. Binding of Isaac Afterbirth?
Yeah, Afterbirth Plus, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Just like all the extra content that's been done for it since. And plus it's the Rebirth remake as well, so
okay.
It's pretty good. If you've played Rebirth elsewhere, like, it's nothing really new here. It's kind of the same game, but that's not a bad thing. It's still great. It's still good. It's nice on Switch.
So you can get that from the Switch store if you want to take a look. Back to mobile stuff super quickly. We've got The Guides Axiom, which is a sequel to the game which came out in 2015 called The Guides. Really challenging cerebral puzzler. Not one for someone who's going to get frustrated and rage quit easily, because it tells you all next to nothing. and you have to look through all these different screens with all these weird like interfaces and dots that appear from nowhere, and it doesn't give you any instruction, and you just have to work it out. It was a very niche appeal, the first game, and I think this will be the same. I actually like it because it's respecting you to a degree that most games don't, because it's just assuming you're going to be able to work this out. And in a lot of cases, you are going, you reach a point where you're just like, I've got no idea what I'm missing here. What is going on? But then when you do find it, it's like, I basically am a genius. And that's kind of nice and fun. But you can download it for free and then pay for tips if you want, which might be cynical, but I ain't paying for nothing. I'm going to beat it by myself. So The Guide Axiom is the name of that one. And finally, back on the Switch, LEGO Worlds has made an appearance, which is LEGO's attempt at being Minecraft. That's fair, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Have you played it, Emily?
No.
Okay. We've got a code in, so there probably will be a review, but it like literally came in before the podcast, so I can't really comment on it right now.
Oh, wicked. Yeah. All right. I watched a lot of stuff. I actually spoke to someone who was working on the game about the development the development of it. And yes, they are essentially giving you these big open world environments, procedurally generated levels made of Lego bricks, and then you can go in and start messing around with them Minecraft style, build things and all that business. But it's full of minifigs and it's got that big franchise attached to it. Will it beat Minecraft? Probably not. But like Glenn says, we've got the code in. We'll take a look at it and check back with PG for more. I think that'll do for this week. Cheers for listening, everybody. If anyone wants a Bluetooth modded headphone, then drop me a line. I'll see what I can do. I'll whip the solder out.
We might see you next week. It depends if you want to come back or not. Please do.
If you do, please bring us balloons, because we like balloons.
I don't like balloons.
Why not?
Is this because the It film's come out?
Yes, because the It film has come out. I've always had an issue with red balloons.
Right, blue. Make sure they're blue balloons, like Pocket Gamer, because we're blue.
I will take that.
We'll take our horror on brand. Thank you very much. All right, folks. Thank you for listening. Like, subscribe, blah, 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 and come back next week for more. See you later.
Love you.
Bye.